good evening, everybody. Yeah, it is Friday. Yay. Good Lord. Next week, Brad Friedman will fill in for us. We will be visiting family for a week. So thank you, Brad Friedman. Do you know what today is? This is June 8th, 1967, registered. Not for very many people. Not unless you happen to be aboard the USS Liberty, June 8th, 1967, or had a family member aboard that surveillance craft. Anyone know? Do anyone know about the attack on the Liberty? A few people do. Not too many. Here's a story, a little quick story. Today, Patricia Blue Roussakis was at Arlington National Cemetery, where she spent June 8th for the past 15 years. When she was there, she joined with a handful of survivors of the 1967 attack on the USS Liberty, which was struck by Israeli air and naval forces. The group listened as a retired chaplain said a prayer, visited with those in attendance, unlike herself, who lost family members in the Liberty, and then they all went off to lunch in Alexandria, Virginia. But even after so many years and knowing full well that the topic of the Liberty, the attack on the Liberty, is widely viewed as poisonous, these visitors noted the absence of political and military officials at their observance yet again. Miss Blue Roussakis said, "We talk about among ourselves." Her first husband, Alan Blue, was a National Security Agency linguist on the ship. He was among the 34 men killed and 174 wounded in the attack. Miss Roussakis says, "Of the family members and the survivors, every single one of us at one time or another has invited our representative from the House or our senator, and no one has ever shown up. No one. Ever." And it's not just the military, the politicians. It's not just the politicians. The military doesn't show up either. 45 years after the attack, no uniform officer has ever attended the ceremony. Mr. Saka said they won't do it. They absolutely will not do it. This hour is being sponsored by Linda Boyd. Thank you, Linda. And her message is that she, Linda in Seattle, salutes the people of Wisconsin who mounted the most progressive, populist, and sustained democratic movement in the country. The newly formed Justice Party would welcome the energy, passion, and vision of the people of Wisconsin who fought so hard for progressive ideals and learned the hard way that the Democrats and the Republicans work together to serve only their corporate sponsors. Justice is the remedy. You can look them up. Justice Party, I'm sure. Thank you, Linda, in Seattle. By the way, we have podcast trivia tonight. You know what? I think we're going to do a little bit earlier. Maybe at the top of the next hour, we'll do podcast trivia. Because at the bottom of the next hour, we're going to do a rebroadcast of last night's Chapter 6 in Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe that I really liked. I don't know about you guys. The lightly armed American spy ship was strafed, napalmed, and torpedoed by Israeli air and naval forces for more than an hour in broad daylight during the Six-Day War back in 67. But for a crewman jerry-rigging a radio to get a message out to the fleet, many Liberty survivors believe they would have been sunk with all hands. President Lyndon Johnson accepted Israel's apology for the attack, but it has remained hotly controversial ever since. theories about Israel's attack, about it being deliberate, about a cover-up, has made the topic of the Liberty too radioactive for members of Congress or Pentagon leaders. They won't touch it because the Israeli lobby is one of the four or five most powerful lobbies in the United States. Let's supposing you don't like the Israeli policy toward the United States. Let's supposing you call your member of Congress or any member of Congress or your senator or any senator and ask him or her to conduct a hearing. You would not even get your phone call returned. Journalist and author James Scott, whose father survived the attack, wrote in the book Attack on the Liberty that Lyndon Johnson believed the attack was deliberate. But he let Israel off the hook because he feared, quote, alienating, end quote, American Jewish leaders from whom he was getting, quote, pressure, end quote, for escalating the war in Vietnam. Joseph Meaders, who's a Liberty survivor and the current president of the Liberty Veterans Association, said he and his predecessors have been inviting members of Congress to the cemetery since they began holding the observances in the 1980s. Meaders said, quote, this year I've invited every member of Congress who represents a congressional district where a USS Liberty KIA killed in action lived. This meant invitations to lawmakers from 21 states. So far, three lawmakers said they would send staffers, but as of last Wednesday, they bailed out, saying there was a scheduling conflict. Meaders said, this is usually how it works. One lawmaker, Texas Republican John Cornyn, remember him, responded to the invitation with a brief note to be read at the ceremony. Cornyn offered his, quote, deep sympathy to the friends and loved ones of the 34 brave Americans who were lost that day. He also wrote, although words are hardly adequate, please know that you and your families are in my thoughts and prayers. The note spoke of honoring the dead and of remaining dedicated, quote, just as they were dedicated to the principles foundational to our Constitution. What the hell does that mean? At 0800 hours, 8 June 1967, eight Israeli recon flights flew over Liberty, which was flying a large American flag. Liberty had been rushed to Sinai to monitor communications of the belligerents in the Third Arab-Israeli War. That was Israel and fighting Egypt, Syria, and Jordan. At 1400 hours, waves of low-flying Israeli Mystere and Mirage 3 fighter bombers repeatedly attacked the American vessel with rockets, napalm, and cannon. The air attacks lasted 20 minutes, concentrating on the ship's electronic antennas and dishes. The Liberty was left afire, listing sharply. Eight of her crew lay dead, 100 seriously wounded, including the captain, Commander William McGonigal. At 1424 hours, three Israeli torpedo boats attacked, raking the burning Liberty with 20-millimeter and 40-millimeter shells. At 1431 hours, an Israeli torpedo hit the Liberty midship, precisely where the signal's intelligence system were located. 25 more Americans died. There's more to this, and we'll cover it when we come back. Stay with us. You should know about this if you don't already.
Fighting.
21 past the hour. I just wonder why this attack on an American surveillance vessel by allegedly our good friends, allies, the Israelis, has never, ever, ever been fully investigated. And now we're at 45 years. This is one of those events that the people who understand what this is about also understand that eventually, by never mentioning this anywhere in mainstream media anywhere, eventually it disappears. And eventually all the people who survived the attack, or relatives of the people who either were killed or survived the attack, they all die too. Israeli gunboats circled the wounded Liberty, firing at crewmen trying to fight the fires. At 15:15 hours, the crew were ordered to abandon ship. The Israeli warships closed and poured machine gun fire into the crowded life rafts, sinking two. As American sailors were being massacred in cold blood, a rescue mission by U.S. 6th Fleet carrier aircraft was mysteriously aborted on orders from the White House. An hour after the attack, Israeli warships and planes returned. Commander McGonagall, who was still alive, gave the order, quote, prepare to repel boarders, end quote. But the Israelis, probably fearful of intervention by the U.S. 6th Fleet, departed. Liberty was left shattered, but defiant, her flag still flying. The Israeli attacks killed 34 U.S. seamen and wounded 171 out of a crew of 297, the worst loss of American naval personnel from hostile action since World War II. Less than an hour after the attack, Israel told Washington its forces had committed, quote, a tragic error, end quote. Later, Israel claimed it had mistaken Liberty for an ancient Egyptian horse transport. U.S. Secretary of State Dean Rusk and Joint Chiefs of Staff Head Admiral Thomas Moore insisted the Israeli attack was deliberate and designed to sink the Liberty. So did three CIA reports. One asserted that Israel's defense minister at the time, General Moshe Dayan, had personally ordered the attack. In contrast to American outrage over North Korea's assault on the intelligence ship Pueblo, or Iraq's mistaken missile strike on the USS Stark, a couple of years ago, the bombing of the USS Cole in Aden and the recent U.S.-China air incident, that was when one of our craft had to land on an island, remember that? This was written about 7 or 8 years ago. The savaging of Liberty was quickly hushed up by Lyndon Johnson and Defense Secretary Robert McNamara. The White House and Congress immediately accepted Israel's explanation and let the matter drop. Israel later paid a token reparation of $6 million. There were reports that two Israeli pilots who had refused to attack Liberty were jailed for 18 years. Surviving Liberty crew members would not be silenced. They kept demanding an open inquiry and tried to tell their story of deliberate attack to the media. Israel's government worked behind the scenes to thwart any effort to have a hearing, going so far as having American pro-Israel groups accuse the Liberty survivors of being anti-Semites and Israel haters. Major TV networks canceled interviews with the crew. A book about the Liberty by crewman James Ennis was dropped from distribution. The Israel lobby in the United States branded him as, quote, an Arab propagandist, end quote. So, why did Israel try to sink a naval vessel of its benefactor and ally? Most likely because Liberty's intercepts flatly contradicted Israel's claim made at the war's beginning on 5 June that Egypt had attacked Israel and that Israel's massive air assault on three Arab nations was in retaliation. In fact, Israel began the war by a devastating Pearl Harbor-style surprise attack that caught the Arabs in bed and destroyed their entire air forces. Most significant, Liberty's intercepts may have shown that Israel seized upon sharply rising Arab-Israeli tensions in May and June of 1967 to launch a long-planned war to invade and annex the West Bank, Jerusalem, Golan, and Sinai. Commander McGonagall was quietly awarded the Medal of Honor for his and his men's heroism, but not in the White House, as is usual, but in an obscure ceremony at the Washington Navy Yard. Crew members' graves were inscribed, quote, died in the Eastern Mediterranean, end quote, as if they had been killed by disease rather than hostile action. We'll be right back.
Getting killed for that greenback dollar bill is me.
He's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Linda in Seattle. She writes that she's doing this to salute the people of Wisconsin who mounted the most progressive, populist, and sustained democratic movement in the country. And the newly formed Justice Party would welcome the energy, passion, and vision of the people of Wisconsin who fought so hard for progressive ideals. And learn the hard way that the Democrats and Republicans work together to serve only their corporate sponsors. Justice is the remedy. That's kind of what we're talking about. Justice, or the lack of it, where it concerned the attack on the Liberty. I remember reading that book back in the 80s, and what I've been sharing with you is written by Eric Margolis, who happens to be Jewish, not that that matters, but, you know, I like to mention that to try to cover my ass from attacks that I'm an anti-Semite, but it never works. He wrote this May 2nd, 2001. Eric Margolis, I don't know what he's doing now, but he was a foreign correspondent for the Toronto Sun. And you can read the book, Attack on the Liberty, if you want. You can probably read a lot of it online. Download it to your Kindle, whatever. Now, there's all kinds of theories as to why this attack occurred. The most blatant theory was that the Israelis... Now, remember, this is 1967, 45 years ago, and the technology that was available to the United States at the time, you know, we still had to put ships on the ground, or ships in the ocean, to monitor activity. We didn't have the sophisticated satellites that we have now. We didn't have the, we had the U-2, but, you know, we didn't have the kind of equipment, electronic equipment, spy equipment that we have now. One theory was the reason that ship was attacked and an attempt to absolutely destroy it. You know, unless you are at war, in a state of declared war, after you blow a ship to pieces, you don't then try to strafe and kill the survivors who are crawling into life rafts. Not unless you want to eliminate all witnesses. So why? Why? This question has never been answered. Here's a theory. The Israelis wanted the United States to think that the attack had been engineered by the Egyptians, which would have brought the U.S. military in on the side of the Israelis. Moshe Dayan was well known as somebody who would use tactics like that. His sole objective was to establish not only the boundaries of Israel, but to the degree that he could, attack, destroy, annihilate, in much the same way that the Jews were annihilated by the Nazis, annihilate the Arab forces that had threatened Israel with the declaration of the Israeli state by the United Nations in, what, 48, 47, 48, I guess? But what the Israeli Air Force and Navy did was just astonishing. And the fact that the United States military and the United States government, I mean, when a U.S. ship is under attack, they will send in the Marines, the Air Force, the Navy. If it's under attack in the Eastern Mediterranean, they'll send in the goddamn cavalry from Japan if they have to. And nobody came to the defense or the rescue of these American military personnel. Nobody. And the order was to stay away. Now, who in the U.S. political military establishment, or how many, whose, made a decision to abandon 200-some-odd American, 297 members of this crew? Who made the order and why? Well, pretty soon, and this is what the Israelis and the U.S. power structure is counting on. Pretty soon there won't be anybody left. And not that the U.S. Congress would ever call a hearing to challenge anything that Israel did. Nothing. The U.S. Congress, both the House and the Senate, live in absolute fear of the Israeli lobby. Total fear. Nobody in either party in the United States will challenge anything that Israel does. Never. Ever. Why? WTF? I mean, why? What is this? Does it have to do with this sick Christian belief that the Hebrews, being the chosen people, that the Christians have to do anything and everything in order to help the state of Israel maintain, so that when the forces of Gog and Magog meet on the plains of Armageddon, or whatever that crapola is, God will look favorably upon what the United States has done with Israel since 1948. Is that it? Is that what it is? Is that what it is? Is that what it is? I'm not laughing. This is it's a horrible chapter. 45 years ago. And nobody in the American military establishment cares to bring this up. Nobody in the political establishment. Nobody. Nobody. You know, what about all this heroic dog snot we always hear about the U.S. military? Well, what about that? You know, the Navy. Heroes one and all! Where are you? Where are you 45 years ago? Where are you now, you flag rank officers and gentlemen? Where are you? 34 American seamen were turned into goddamn hamburger by allegedly our great and glorious ally. And nobody will raise this issue. Oh, and don't expect to ever, ever see or hear about this in mainstream media. I don't give a damn who the liberal is, who the progressive is, who the right winger is, who the middle of the roader is, who the blah, blah, blah. None of them are allowed to bring it up. Not one. Ever. Why? Why? Rant off. Terry Jones, remember that piece of human waste down in Florida, the guy who burned the Quran and I don't know how many scores of people died in the ensuing riots in the Muslim world? Remember that piece of human waste? He runs the Dove World Outreach Center in Gainesville. Guess what he's done now? He has hanged in effigy Barack Obama outside the church. There's a picture of it online. Look for this this picture. The Secret Service, according to a spokesman, is aware of this incident and will conduct appropriate follow-up. Oh, yeah? That's according to Broward Palm Beach New Times. The effigy is suspended. The effigy of the president is suspended from a makeshift gallows with a noose of yellow rope. It has a doll in its right hand and a rainbow-colored gay pride flag in its left. Now, this piece of human waste, Terry Jones, said all this is in response to the president's response or his stance on abortion and what this piece of human waste calls his appeasing of radical Islam. In a telephone interview with the Huffington Post, this piece of human waste said the flag was meant to call attention to Obama's stance on same-sex marriage, and that the baby doll is there because the president is, quote, favorable toward abortion, end quote. Jones also said that, this piece of human waste also said that radical Islam is, quote, the most dangerous threat to life and national security in America, end quote. There's also an Uncle Sam dummy standing at the base of the gallows. The piece of human waste told Huffington Post that the Obama effigy had originally been positioned to be hanging Uncle Sam when the display went up 2 weeks ago, but that the church changed the display 2 days ago. How about that?
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Look at the state of the world that we live in, where no one gives a damn about the future of children. Just building the cash flow, making
10 before the hour.
Expose the truth. Is that what the war's about? Because I don't understand. But what kind of a man?
We're going to open the phone lines during the next break, because when we come back from the top of the hour break, it's podcast trivia right at the top of the hour as soon as we come back. So if you would like to win a one-year subscription to commercial-free Malloy program downloads, all you have to do is get online and answer the multiple-choice question. That's during the next break. We'll get your calls on. You know how the Egyptian people swarmed into Tahrir Square during the uprising against Mubarak last year. And some of the leaders of that were women. They participated, women did, as leading activists, protesters, medics, and even fighters to ward off attacks by security agents or affiliated thugs. Well, today, in Cairo, a mob of hundreds of men assaulted women holding a march demanding an end to sexual harassment. These women marching had some male guardians, and the male guardians were overwhelmed by the attackers, according to the Associated Press. And several of the female marchers in Cairo's Tahrir Square were then groped and molested, their clothes pulled off. From the ferocity of the assault, some of the victims said it appeared to have been an organized attempt to drive women out of demonstrations and trample on the pro-democracy protest movement. Now, this is the sort of thing that fundamentalist Christians in this country love. They wish they had the ability to attack women in the same manner that these Muslim Brotherhood people do. And that's who's behind this. This is a religious reaction. This has nothing to do with politics or revolution. This has to do with religion. Islam, Christianity, they want their women to shut the goddamn hell up and sit down. Shut up. So here these women were today. The attack apparently follows, according to the Associated Press, smaller scale assaults on women all this week in Tahrir Square. Tahrir Square, that's like what? That's like Lexington and Concord in this country. It's like the Liberty Bell. That's like Washington crossing the Delaware. It's like, I mean, that was the epicenter of the uprising that forced Mubarak to step down. Right? The democracy movement. Hip, hip, hooray. Now, thousands have been gathering in the square this week in protests over a variety of issues, mainly over worries that presidential elections this month will secure the continued rule by elements of Mubarak's regime backed by the ruling military and the radical Muslims. Earlier this week, an Associated Press reporter witnessed about 200 men assault a woman who eventually fainted before men trying to help could reach her. Now, the march today was organized as a demand to end sexual assault. About 50 women participated, surrounded by a larger group of male supporters who joined their hands to form a protective ring around them. The protesters carried posters saying, "The people want to cut the hand of the sexual harasser." They chanted, "The Egyptian girl says it loudly, harassment is barbaric." And after the marchers entered a crowded corner of the square, a group of men waded into the women, heckling them and groping them. The male security force tried to fend them off, and it turned into a melee involving a mob of hundreds. According to the AP, the marchers tried to flee while the attackers chased them, and the male supporters tried to protect them. But the attackers persisted, cornering several women against a metal sidewalk railing, including an Associated Press reporter, shoving their hands down their clothing, trying to grab their bags. The male supporters fought back, swinging belts and fists. Eventually, the women were able to reach refuge in a nearby building while the mob screamed outside until they finally left. So, this is as hideous and horrendous as this is. This is exactly what religious fanatics do to women. I don't care what the religion is. I really don't, especially the three people of the book. I mean, it's absolutely. How can you call yourself a Muslim? How do you do that? Knowing that women in your religion are treated like dirt. How can you do that? Muhammad didn't treat women like dirt. Jesus didn't treat women like dirt. How do you do that? How do you justify this? You pray five times a day Do you consider yourself a hypocrite? Are you trying to be as vicious to women as Christians, your Christian brothers? What the hell is wrong with these religions? What is it? Why do women terrify you? They're just rhetorical questions, never mind. All right, we're going to take a break here. Kathy's going to open up the lines, and we will put you on hold when we come back after the break. Podcast trivia. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Linda in Seattle. So let me mention again, she sponsored that first hour in honor of the people of Wisconsin who mounted the most progressive, populist, and sustained democratic movement in the country. And the newly formed Justice Party would welcome that energy, passion, and vision of the people of Wisconsin who fought so hard for progressive ideals and learned the hard way that the Democrats and Republicans worked together to serve only their corporate sponsors. Justice is the remedy. Thank you very much, Linda. All right. Do you want to do the real reason we're here tonight? Ah! It is time once again on the Malloy Program for Podcast Trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription to Malloy Show downloads, commercial-free. All you have to do is answer our question correctly. All right, who do we have, Johnny? Janice is in San Francisco. Hi, Janice.
Hi, Mike.
You ready to play podcast trivia?
Yes, I am.
Have you played before?
No, I have not.
You haven't? All right, well, this nope. This is going to be the thrill of your lifetime.
Okay.
Well, not really. A thrill. This would be the best thrill you've had in the last 10 minutes. How's that?
Yeah, okay. That will work.
All right. Here we go. Right. A massive object washed ashore off the Oregon coast this week. Scientists say it was saturated with millions of various life forms, including worms, bacteria, small crustaceans, single-celled creatures, all of which could pose a threat to the U.S. ecosystem. Was this massive object A, Rush Limbaugh stuck in a Walmart beach toy, B, a dead sperm whale, C, a barge set adrift in Japan after the tsunami a year ago, or D, Newt Gingrich's now decaying ego?
I believe it was B, a beached sperm whale?
No.
Oh.
No, it wasn't a.
Darn.
Well, good try. Maybe, you know, maybe.
Next time.
Maybe next time. All right. Thanks, Janice. I appreciate the effort. Thanks for checking in and thanks for playing podcast trivia. Okay. Do we have another player, Johnny? I didn't think it was that hard. I really didn't. Anybody want to take a shot at this? 877-996-2556. Damn. Kathy, we can't even give them away? Have we gotten the program down to that level? Oh, my God. Oh, wait a minute. Let's give it another minute. Wait! There's a line ringing. Yes! Is it somebody? It could be. What we really want, yeah, well, everybody in the chat room knows. They're all going, it was Limbaugh! It was Limbaugh! I know. All right, Bruce, are you ready to give it a shot?
I sure am.
Okay. A massive object washed ashore off the Oregon coast this week. Scientists say it was saturated with millions of various life forms, including worms, bacteria, small crustaceans, and single-celled creatures, all of which could pose a threat to the U.S. ecosystem. Was this massive object A, Rush Limbaugh stuck in a Walmart beach toy, B, a dead sperm whale, C, a dock set adrift in Japan after the tsunami a year ago, or D, Newt Gingrich's now decaying ego?
Oh, I just would love to say Rush Limbaugh, but it was the dock.
It was the dock. You're right. C. All right, Bruce. I'm glad you won that one. I didn't know that it would be difficult, but I guess it could be. A lot of sperm whales wash ashore.
Yeah, I was gonna say sitting on the dock of the bay, but you know.
There you go. Have you played trivia before?
I have once.
Okay, well this time you won.
All right, cool.
Well, thank you. Stay online. Kathy will get the pertinent information. And thanks for playing, Bruce. I'm sorry, Bruce, you wanted to say something else?
No, actually I did. Regarding the USS Liberty.
Yeah.
I wanted to make a mention about a little historical fact that most people aren't aware of or probably wouldn't be.
Okay.
JFK would have been president in 1967 had he not been shot down in Dallas.
Right.
Or somewhere else along the line. But in any event, JFK had a lot of tension between him and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
David Ben-Gurion, who was the president of Israel from its inception, resigned in June of 1963 over efforts by the JFK to inspect their nuclear facilities at Dimona.
Mm-hmm.
And the upshot was that the Israelis were incensed. They wanted the nuclear bomb. JFK didn't want them to have it. And there was a lot of tension. So the point is that had JFK been president in 1967, it's a very good chance that the U.S. Would have had a different reaction. As soon as LBJ took over, policy towards Israel changed. Israel detonated their first nuclear bomb in 1964, and JFK had even made mention, he said, the sons of bitches lie to me all the time about their nuclear capability.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, had JFK lived and had he been in the White House at the time of this assault, well, whether the Israelis would have even tried it again is another question entirely. But nonetheless, the fact that LBJ called off the rescue, and on and on and on. And so it's just a little side note that had JFK lived, it's very likely that the Liberty never would have. Or had it been assaulted, it wouldn't have turned out the way it did.
You know, that order had to have come from Johnson.
Yeah.
As the commander in chief. Like I said earlier tonight, I don't think there's a military commander on earth who, hearing or knowing that U.S. military personnel are under that kind of a vicious attack would not have ordered some kind of response.
I agree.
So it had to have come from Johnson. I've just never understood why, up to this day, 45 years later, there has never been an extensive official or even a not extensive inquiry by the Congress into what happened.
Yeah, they haven't done it for JFK's assassination either.
Well,
so.
No, they had. They had a congressional investigation.
Well,
and
yeah,
remember what they said in that investigation. They said that when the Congress did that, I don't know, was it 25 years ago? They said there was enough information on hand from the sound engineers or whomever it was that they were absolutely, no, I'm exaggerating. They were convinced that there was a second gunman,
right?
Because of the way the I don't know the
because of the acoustics, yeah, I know.
Yeah, the acoustics are analyzing or what happened. So, yeah, it's just amazing some of the stuff that we will never know. All right, Bruce, hold on.
All right, thank you very
and
much.
And thanks for playing the game. Kathy will get the information from you. There's just certain things, you know, about there are all sorts of things like that, you know, and I know that there are. There are entire populations in this country who also have legitimate claims. But given the fact that the United States is as warmongering a nation as it is, I would think, and I would suspect that a lot of people would think, that an attack by an ally, a repeated attack, shooting, strafing, torpedoing, bombing, people who were struggling to not drown would have brought some kind of an inquiry, wouldn't you think?
Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Radio Gumshoe coming up after the next break. All right. We have some folks here on hold. Joe is in Franklin, Indiana. Hello, Joe.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Hey, I'm sorry?
Didn't say a word. Go ahead, Joe.
Just want to know. I've been listening to you for a while, and you know, the one thing that jumps out at me when listening to you is that anyone who doesn't agree with Mike Malloy is personally attacked.
That's not true. That's absolutely not true. And usually what I do when people start a conversation with me with that kind of half-assed statement, I just dump them. There's no point in continuing. So, if you really listen to the program, you would know that I didn't take calls. I very seldom take calls. Sometimes I do, but I don't like for people to agree with me. Out of your goddamn mind? That's not what you wanted to talk about anyway. You told Kathy you wanted to talk about religious fanatics, so you're a liar. That's usually the only way you right-wingers get on this program. You lie. But that's what you do. That's what you do. Dog dump stinks. Republicans, conservatives lie. It's that simple. Mark is in San Francisco. Hello.
Hi, Mike. First time caller. I've been emailing you for a while.
Yeah, all right.
The wanderer in San Francisco. Yeah, you know, I don't have any stake in the Israeli state per se. You know, I was born in New York City, so I'm not an Israeli citizen. I could be, but I don't think I want to be.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't know what the reasons for, what the excuses were. concerning that attack on the Liberty ship. And who knows, it could be more complicated. Way more complex. I mean, the United States, we don't know what they were actually doing out there, do we?
Say that again?
Well, the Liberty ship, the USS Liberty, don't know what reasons the Israelis had an excuse that they thought it was an Egyptian vessel.
No. They knew it was an American vessel. They absolutely knew it. First of all, it was flying an American flag about the size of an apartment building. Secondly, the location and the purpose of the Liberty were well known. I mean, you don't enter into a battle zone without clearly declaring what you're doing there. So, no, there was, you know, we can sit here and speculate until hell freezes over. The truth is the American military or the American government has never seen fit to hold a hearing. Do you find that a little interesting? Remember,
you know, it is interesting because the information that's available to us is very limited, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not. It's very extensive. You have to dig it out, though. I mean, when you say it's limited, I'm not sure what you mean. Maybe by mainstream media, but there have been books written about this. There are eyewitness reports. There is all sorts of information out there, Mark. You just have to find it. Now, you're not going to find it on ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, CNBC, Fox, or anybody else.
So I've done a little bit of reading on it. I'm not all that enamored with the subject. My concern is that the Western world's fascination with the Middle East only goes as far as their need for oil, and I don't think any of those people over there matter to the Western world except for the oil.
Well,
so anything else that comes, any other occurrences?
You're probably right with that, but it seems to me that the wholesale slaughter of 34 U.S. naval personnel, or whatever they were, the slaughter of these people and the repeated attacks and the wounding of 100-plus grievous wounds, and not just strafing and bombing, but torpedoing. I mean, this went on for an hour-long attack against an American-flagged vessel. So, and not by... not by Syria, not by Egypt, not by Iraq, not by Iran, not by Russia, not by whoever, but by our great and dear allies, the Israelis. Now, one would think, well, at least this one would think, that such an incident would have at some time in the past almost half century begged for a full-scale investigation before everybody's dead. All the Israeli leaders who were involved in the 67 war, I believe, are all dead now, except for, what's his name, who is still in a coma, I believe, the Israeli, the large man, the,
Netanyahu?
No, not Netanyahu. Netanyahu was 15 years old. Ariel Sharon. Thank you, Greg. Ariel Sharon is still, I think he was certain. Of course, he's beyond questioning, but it just has always intrigued me that that's an investigation we're never going to have. When we come back, Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe, Episode 6. Stick around. 25 before the hour. As promised, from the mighty mind of writer-producer Bob Alexander, it's performed by the Mighty Malloy. Radio players, Chapter 6 of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
From Hollywood, the Jimmy Durante Show.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Now, have you heard the news?
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Two travelers blast beyond the barriers of space and time through a million would-be years and a thousand maybe worlds. Yes, radio listeners, it's time once again to join truth seekers from around the globe who anxiously await the return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
You remember last time Mike and Kathy convinced Hal to stop the Tesla Time-O-Matic before the AE-35 unit failed with disastrous consequences. Once outside the time-traveling pod, they encounter a little girl, Molly, who has mysteriously arrived with Mike and Kathy's dog, Asta. Confused? Join the club and join us now for tonight's thrilling episode, Chapter 6, The Menacing Mist.
Well, Molly, didn't your mommy and daddy tell you you shouldn't talk to strangers?
You're silly. You're not strangers. You moved into the house next door right after school started. Come on, we have to go. You told me this morning you had to be at Mr. Moody's before 3 o'clock.
One last question, sweetie. What year is it?
You told me you'd ask me that. It's 1959, of course.
Molly, why don't you run on up ahead with Asta?
Okay.
Mike, how did he get here?
Well, as weird as it sounds, we must have traveled back here to... When did Molly say?
She said we moved next door to her after school started.
Yeah, right. But for some reason, we came back here about 10 months ago. And then this morning, gave Asta to Molly and told her to meet us here, wherever here is.
I know, but where did Asta come from?
She gave him to us just now.
But where did she get him?
We gave him to her this morning.
Right. But where did he come from? And if you tell me she gave him to us one more time, I'll...
There wasn't an unraveling time travel paradoxes chapter in my gumshoe training manual.
Will you guys hurry up?
We better stop all this self-referencing stuff and get on with advancing the plot.
Well, it was either that or I'd have to do a voiceover narration describing tramping through the woods, walking up to the edge of town, and... But here we are.
Mr. Moody, Mr. Moody, here they are.
Well, here you all are, right on time.
You were expecting us?
Yeah, and I've got pert near what you need. Come along into my office in the back.
We've been walking quite a ways. Is it possible we could buy some bottled water?
Bottled water? You mean some fellas figured out you could fill up a bottle from any old tap and charge folks for it?
Well, if we could just have a glass of water?
Well, I don't think that's a very good idea, Ms. Malloy. Best if you just get a soda from the machine over there.
I guess fizzy sugar water will have to do.
Hiya, considering the alternative. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. First things first, I finally got the pots in yesterday and got her all fixed up as good as new.
What's that?
Why, this is your new AE-35 unit.
How did you know?
It wasn't that hard. Most of the parts I ordered from my Heathkit catalog. Some of those transistors are a bit dear. Most people around here never even heard of them.
But you fixed the AE-35 unit? I don't even know what it does.
And you don't need to know either. You just need to get out of here. Before it's too late.
What's going on?
Well, I told you once, and it looks like I'll have to tell it to you again. Come over here by the window. Now, what do you see?
Well, it looks like any other small town.
Yeah, in most ways. Now, you came from way down over there. We call that part the zone. And now, over there, live the Cleavers. Ward and June and their two boys. And over a couple blocks this way are the Andersons. Jim and Margaret, Betty, Bud, and Kathy. Are you starting to get the picture? Now, if you keep walking toward the center of town, you'll pass by the Nelson's house.
Ozzie. I get it. Ozzie, Harriet, David, and...
Ricky? Oh, Mike, where are we?
Springfield. It's a great place to raise your kids up, or it used to be.
What kind of place is this?
Just your typical American town. You should know it pretty well by now. You've been watching it on your TV sets for over 50 years.
But I don't understand.
All those old shows were made in Hollywood.
Who says? How do you know that for a fact? Why don't you grab another Moxie from the machine, and I'll tell you all you need to know, so you'll grab this thingamabob.
AE-35 unit.
Whatever. Grab this AE-35 unit, that little girl and your little dog.
What's going to happen?
Well, it all started when that fool Ozzie Nelson decided he'd quit the band business and move out here. Next thing you know, he started fooling around and took a bunch of home movies, typical stuff of the wife and kids, and then he had an idea. Why not make his home movies into a TV show starring his wife and the kids? Everybody from around here thought he was crazy until all those film trucks showed up from California. And the next thing you know, The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet was on the TV. Well, when the money started pouring in, the town went nuts. Suddenly, Jim Anderson decided his family could be on the TV, too. And, of course, Ward Cleaver. He wanted a slice of the pie, too.
Oh, my God. Leave it to Beaver.
I thought there was something not quite right about that boy.
But how did that affect the whole town?
Well, Springfield wasn't a town anymore. It was an industry. Everybody worked on the shows. Everybody. And for a while, it looked like Springfield was an even better place to live until...
What happened?
Well, people started to crack up. Nobody could live like that for any length of time at all.
Tell me about it.
Why, I almost forgot you were here.
I didn't have any lines till now. Anyway, it's true what he says. This place has become really creepy.
I'd guess you have to call it stress or something. Everybody's always acting like everything's just fine and dandy because you never know if you're being filmed or not. And the things we were supposed to laugh at. Beaver gets stuck up on a billboard sign and the whole town's supposed to crack up. Like, that's the funniest, cutest thing we ever did see. Well, after a while, people just couldn't take it anymore. They started lining up in droves to see the town psychiatrist.
That's my daddy.
What does a psychiatrist have to do with...
Instead of giving everybody a prescription for barbiturates. Whatever. Instead of giving everybody a prescription, my daddy said it would be a lot cheaper if we just dumped it all in the water tower.
After a couple of days of living in Springfield and drinking the water, you'll fit right in. You might even start to like Ricky Nelson's music. God help you.
This is one big reality show. We've got to get out of here.
Who runs this town?
Well, who do you want to know about first? The Republicans or the aliens?
Portrait of an American family on the eve of invasion from outer space. Of course, we know it's merely fiction. And yet, think twice when you drink your next glass of water. Find out if it's from your local reservoir or possibly it came direct to you from the Twilight Zone.
Holy cow, we're only on the 6th episode, and already the writer has thrown in everything and the kitchen sink. How convoluted are things going to get? Here's a scene from our next thrill-packed, hair-curling, ear-popping episode.
Although when I mentioned that the poison would kill me within the hour, did either of you happen to notice the time?
For more heart-pounding excitement, be sure to tune in next time for The Return of Mike Malloy, Radio Gumshoe.
I always hate it when they're over. No, I don't want to play it again, but I'd love to, but, you know, I love those. Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe, written and produced by Bob Alexander from his artistic enclave somewhere in Vancouver, British Columbia. As performed by the Mighty Malloy Radio Players. I wish we knew what was coming next, you know? He won't tell us. He doesn't tell us anything. He just sends the scripts. But Bob is very talented. There is no question. These are fun to do. They kind of remind me of, excuse me, when I was a kid, I used to go to the YMCA every Saturday. For, you know, swimming and pool and, you know, shooting pool and ping pong and stuff like that. And spend the whole day at the YMCA in Toledo. And would take a lunch. My mom would usually pack a bologna sandwich Do y'all remember baloney? And after the, you know, hanging out in the gym and shooting baskets or boxing or whatever it is we were doing that day, and then, you know, into the pool, then it would be time for lunch. And you'd go to this little tiny, they had a little theater with a projection booth in the back. It was a room, not a theater. Come on. It was all folding chairs. And the one I remember was a cereal called The Clutching Hand. The Clutching Hand. And each episode would start with this shadow across the screen. You could hear the camera, that old style camera, clicking in the back in the projection room. And this hand would come across the screen, a shadowy hand. And the clutching hand would do all kinds of terrible things. It's amazing how you start tripping out like that. We'll be right back.
I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to phone in. I don't know why this has any meaning whatsoever. Republican politicians are usually absolute cowards when it comes to picking up a weapon and fighting in the conflicts that they help engineer and for which they, you know, give great big loud guttural fight of farting cheers for. Can you imagine Limbaugh with a In a squad of anybody, you know, Marines, a squad of Rangers, soldiers, pig bastards. I hate them. But three generations of Romneys, this was, have avoided military service while pushing a corporate war agenda. This is at the blog site downwithtyranny.blogspot.com. Down with Tyranny. And just a couple lines here. Although the biggest news out of Massachusetts this week was about how Scott Brown worked to weaken Wall Street reform while taking Wall Street cash, there's an important Romney story we shouldn't let disappear in the corporate media vacuum without a trace. The Romney story goes back to when Scott Brown was still fooling around with camp counselors and priests. Romney's a year older than the writer of this piece. We both came of age, it says here, at the height of the war against Vietnam. Obama was still a child at the time of that war. I was very much opposed to it. Romney very much supported it, at least verbally. We both went abroad. I wasn't drafted because we had a lottery system, and my number was so high that I could have been one of the last to ever be called up. But I didn't want to live in a country, couldn't live in a country, that was committing genocide against the peasants and workers in Vietnam. I had this idea that if I paid any taxes at all, it was like buying napalm to kill children. I spent almost 7 years abroad. Romney went abroad, too, to avoid military service in a war he was all for. He escaped the draft by invoking his right to serve Mormonism as a missionary and lived in a palace in France. His dubious record is being looked at more closely. On a stage crowded with war heroes, Mitt Romney recently praised the sacrifice, quote, of the great men and women of every generation who serve in our armed forces, end quote. It's a sacrifice this Republican presidential candidate did not make. Though an early supporter of the Vietnam War, Romney avoided military service at the height of the fighting after high school by seeking and receiving 4 draft deferments, according to Selective Service records. They included college deferments and a 31-month stretch as a minister of religion in France. A classification for Mormon missionaries at the draft at the time feared was being overused. The country was cutting troop levels by the time he became eligible for the draft, and his lottery number was not called. But because Romney, now 65, was of draft age during Vietnam, his military background, or rather his lack of one, is facing new scrutiny as he courts veterans and makes his case to the nation to be commander-in-chief. He's also intensified his criticism lately of Obama's plans to scale back the nation's military commitments abroad. He said in 2007, his first White House bid underway, that he had, quote, longed in many respects to actually be in Vietnam, end quote. But his actions, Selective Service records, and previous statements show little interest in joining a conflict that ultimately claimed more than 58,000 American lives. Still, he repeatedly cites his commitment to public service and the nation's military while campaigning for president. In San Diego, a week or so ago, to a Memorial Day crowd of thousands, flush with military veterans of all ages, he said, quote, greatness in a people, I believe, is measured by the extent to which they will give themselves to something bigger than themselves, end quote. And it goes on here, but this is another Dick Cheney, another cowardly piece of human waste who has no problem ordering the deaths of thousands of American soldiers. The deaths of millions of civilians. It was Mitt Romney's father, George, you remember, who also supported the war in Vietnam until he went there. And when he came as an observer, and when he came back, this was in 1968 when Romney was seeking George Romney was seeking the Republican nomination for president. And he came back and he had a press conference in Michigan. And he made the famous or infamous statement that he had been brainwashed by the U.S. military, by the U.S. media, and by U.S. politicians. And that, in fact, he had seen enough evidence that the United States was heading for defeat. So, I don't know, maybe that's a difference between, a generational difference between Republicans back in the day who occasionally would tell the truth and Republicans now who are nothing but lying goddamn scum who will say anything, do anything for their corporate masters in order to steal another election. But when you contrast George Romney and Mitt Romney on just this one particular issue, at least you get a slight flash of honesty that came from George Romney, and it was public honesty. He didn't tell his wife. He didn't tell his business partners. He told the whole country that he had been brainwashed. We'll be back. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. If you want to chat, stay with us. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. You ought to go to the Mike Malloy chat room. We're having a great discussion in there about shooting rats. Just go to MikeMalloy.com and find, I think that's how you do it. Is that how you do it? Do you find it at MikeMalloy.com? I don't even know. But if you're not in the Malloy chat room, run by, not run by me, it's run by a bunch of real interesting people. All right. Back to your phone calls. Let's do that. Ted is in Irvine, California, listening online. Hello, Ted.
Hi, Mike. Nice to talk to you.
My pleasure.
Yes, my comment is regarding the 9/11 truth.
Uh-huh.
Right, and I felt like more justice needed to be given to the subject on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And I wanted to ask you, had you ever seen a movie... I think you can watch it on Google Videos. It's called The Great Conspiracy by Barry Zwicker.
I have not seen that. I think I've heard of it.
Well, there's a segment in it. A very great movie. He has two editions of it, a first part and a second part. I urge you to watch them both and all your listeners. There's a segment in it where he interviews Michael Rupert, who I'm sure you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Michael Rupert retells a story about the war games that occurred on 9/11, where the U.S. military was allegedly performing various military plane exercises and described creating false blips on radar screens, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's two camps in the 9/11 truth, the let it happen on purpose and the made it happen on purpose.
Right.
And I just wondered, it was my feeling that the war games really underscored the fact that the U.S. government made 9/11 happen. What do you think about that?
Well, I'll tell you what, Ted. I've talked about this for a decade. I believe that there had to have been some sort of either direct knowledge that something horrible was about to happen in this country, or there had to have been a refusal to consider something horrible was about to happen in this country. Either one, to me, is criminal when it is when either one occurs at the highest levels of government. I don't know what happened, but I will tell you this: for 19 people to was it 19 to come to this country, most of them from Saudi Arabia, learn how to fly commercial airliners, and then. Board commercial jets and do what happened or do what they did. For that to have happened, it would have required either a complete failure of the national security state such as it was in this country in 2001 and a complete failure of a system that we have spent who knows how much money on. The evidence makes me believe, or if not the evidence, I shouldn't say evidence, there is some evidence that causes me to totally doubt the official story, or totally disbelieve. I mean, I just cannot get my mind around the fact that this happened the way the Bush crime family presented it, and subsequent reportage on this. I don't care who it's by. The story now has become accepted that these guys came here, they trained, There were a couple of people who said something horrible is about to happen. There was information. Bin Laden determined to attack in the United States. Whatever. The collapse of those three buildings. The whole thing is just the plane crash in Pennsylvania. I mean, planes don't crash like that. I don't care. I don't care what you say to me. Planes don't crash like that. They don't disintegrate entirely on impact. They don't. They just don't do that. The whatever that hit the Pentagon. I mean, all of this. Look. One of the sticking points for me has been, of all the cameras, all the video recordings, recorders trained on the Pentagon from every goddamn angle there is, and yet nobody has been able to produce that key piece of videotape that showed that commercial jetliner coming in at treetop level and slamming into the side of the Pentagon, and nobody. Now, there was a piece of video up on YouTube that claimed to have done that, and it does nothing of the sort. And the fact that, the Bush crime family, I don't know if this is true or not, but confiscated all the tape, all the videotape that was available from just about every business, every apartment building, every everything. And the Pentagon is surrounded, isn't it, by condos and apartment buildings. I don't mean surrounded, but, you know, in that general area, a lot of people live in that area. So to just to cut it short, because this is one of those occurrences in this country that we all have a choice. We can either believe it or not believe it. I choose not to believe it. And the reason I choose not to believe it is not because I'm a conspiracy freak. I don't think I am. I may be, but I don't think I am. I'm pretty open to logic and reason. I know Ben Burch of White Rose Society has tried for a decade to, until he finally gave up, to convince me that what I'm telling you right now is just nonsense and bat squeeze. And, you know, I respect Ben. I respect his opinion. He's a scientist of a sort. He really is. And a technician. But I kind of stay away from the topic because until the national security state that we now live in decides to come clean on every single aspect of this, then we're never going to know anyway. We're going to know exactly what the power wants us to know. I mean, that's very simple. I don't think anyone would dispute that. But at the very least, if this is the proper word, at the very least, this was a failure on the part of the Bush administration and the military security of this country on a scale that just staggers the imagination. If people can come into this country, or could at the time, almost 11 years ago, and do what they did, following the script laid out there by the Bush crime family, if all of that could happen, and our response was what it was on that horrible day, then this, I just simply can't accept that. I couldn't accept it 3 months after it happened, 5 years, 10 years. I can't accept it now. And I will go to my grave knowing that I have been fed a bunch of garbage where it concerns 9/11. Sorry for the long answer, Ted, but that's what it takes. I, you know. Thanks. Appreciate your call.
let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
The hour. I have a Prairie 2 thingy here, which we will get to probably after the next break. Jim is in Lombard, Illinois. Hi, Jim.
Good evening, Mike.
Hey.
I have a quote here by an 18th century philosopher named Voltaire.
Is that the one that says, anyone who has the power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit atrocities?
That's right. That's what he says, yeah.
I kind of thought, actually, he said absurdities. You can commit absurdities, but I would just, or no, he said injustices. Anyone who can make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit injustices. But I'd change it a little bit, make you commit atrocities.
Well, I read it in the book I read, they used the word atrocities.
Oh,
so
did they?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. What does that mean to you, Jim? I know what it means to me. What does it mean to you?
Well, what I think it really applies to is religion in the world. And they make you believe these things mm-hmm. like there's a spook in the sky that's telling you to do things. And these people, they really believe that stuff about this spook up there in the sky. They'll kill you over that.
Oh sure. They'll kill you. They'll kill your mama. They'll kill your grandchildren.
And that's one of the biggest absurdities I see in the human race is these religious beliefs and the things they'll do in the name of their religion.
That's very true, Jim. Do you know somebody named Blue?
No, I've heard him on your radio station before, but I don't know him. I don't know. I've heard him talking to you before. Yeah.
He was kind of weird. Well, I like that Voltaire quote. You know, another one that's a favorite of mine, Jim, is by the another French philosopher, Denis Diderot, and that quote is. Man will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest.
I've read that one before too.
that's one of my favorites.
Well, they're both to me very very pertinent, and I think that they have been accurate quotes. Throughout the history of the human, well, throughout the history of civilization.
I definitely agree with you, Jim.
Okay, Mike, that's all I had to say.
All right, sir, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, Jim. It's good to hear that Illinois accent again, too. I miss that. We lived there for 3.5 years in Chicago, and you tend to start to... I don't know how to say this. Different accents in different parts of the country. If you live there, eventually the accent kind of creeps into your head and you start thinking in those terms. I find myself a lot of times thinking like this. Well, hell, I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to do. I know, maybe I'll just get a box of 22s and go out here and back and kill me some goddamn rats. But I love that accent. I love that Midwestern sound. Prairie 2's piece is called A Job at Any Wage, and I'll share it with you when we come back. Did I tell you that Brad Friedman will be filling in this week coming while we take the kid and go visit some of the relatives? We had planned on a round-the-world cruise, but just couldn't find the money in the checkbook this year, so. I wish I could get speaking engagements, Kathy, where some organization in Germany would say, we want Mike Malloy, we've heard him on the internet, we want him to come here and give like an hour talk. And, you know, they provide airfare and accommodations. And it's about the only way we're ever going to travel beyond what we have. I mean, we used to travel, but a little bit difficult to do that right now. So if you're listening to this program in Africa or Europe or Down Under or South Asia or South America, and you would like, I'm cheaper than Newt Gingrich, right? If you would like a spokesperson from the American left and his producer and their child, shoot me an email. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
This year,
the Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
25 before the hour. If you if you're interested in reading a very interesting piece on 9/11, Jesse Richard, who is the founder of TVNewsLies.org, put it up back on the 10th anniversary, and it's titled "You Only Believe the Official 9/11 Story Because You Don't Know the Official 9/11 Story." You can go to TVNewsLies.org, and then in their search engine there, just type in 9/11 Truth. And you'll get a bunch of stuff, but just go until you find that title. It's not that far down. You only believe the official 9/11 story because you don't know the official 9/11 story. And Jesse has written extensively on this topic, among others. And you might want to check it out. Go to TV News Lies. You know that website, TVNewsLies.org. Type into their search engine 9/11 Truth. And find the one headlined, "You Only Believe the Official 9/11 Story Because You Don't Know the Official 9/11 Story." Jesse wrote it back in September of last year. Okay? And so there's obviously there's a lot of good stuff there on that particular topic and others. You're talking about TVNewsLies.org, folks. Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent, submits the following. Initial jobless claims were down significantly this week. Oddly, this news didn't rate the same screaming headlines as last week's smaller uptick in claims did. You know, those headlines trumpeting Obama's economic failures, but they didn't mention any of the things that Republicans did to cause the problem. You might think the media, who tied the increase to Obama, would want to give him credit this week for the decrease. Everyone from the so-called liberal media, who we know cover for Obama, to the fair and balanced Rupert Murdoch media empire, all were silent. The fact is that neither number meant much of anything, but like beauty, significant news is in the eye of the beholder. Let's dig a little deeper. The reported number, the seasonally adjusted number, was 377,000 initial claims for unemployment. The actual number of initial claims, unadjusted, totaled 321,884. This makes the real number 55,000 less and getting close to the range of a booming economy. But don't get too excited here. What is actually going on is that this time of year you normally have a hiring boom. So employers don't lay off many people either. This year wasn't normal, between global warming canceling out winter so that seasonal work could start earlier, and the fact that employers didn't need to wait for a new crop of graduates to hire. They had the crop from the last 4 years to pick from. Obama made a minor slip of the tongue and said, quote, the private sector is doing just fine, end quote, and the right jumped all over this. And everything Obama said about the public sector layoffs hurting the economy didn't matter. The sage from Bain, Mitt Romney, criticized Obama for, quote, wanting to hire more government workers, including more firemen, more policemen, more teachers. Did he not get the message of Wisconsin? Romney added. He also said, the American people did. It's time for us to cut back on government and help the American people. Romney managed to highlight Obama's point that the media was trying to cover up. This guy just isn't that smart. Of course, Obama was right about the private sector. You know, the job creators, they're doing just fine. The corporate coffers have $5 trillion in cash, and they continue to show record profits quarter after quarter, despite the Republicans' claims of failures to be blamed on Obama's economic policies. And the Romney class of oligarchs continue to take home hundreds of billions in personal income and pay little in taxes. In fact, Obama's policies are partly to blame. He has presided over the greatest contraction of government since the military deactivation following the Korean War. Eisenhower went on his own New Deal spending spree to stimulate the economy, following that to keep the economy booming. Among the purchases Ike made were several hundred surplus aircraft to be used by the U.S. Forest Service to fight fires. They still have a couple of dozen of these tanker planes. Bush sold off the other 450 planes of all types to crony contractors, and these 60-year-old planes keep breaking apart in midair while fighting fires. It's amazing they can find pilots go up in these death traps. But to quote any Republican, they should be glad they have a job at any wage. End quote. Yeah, Prairie 2 mentioned something here about what Obama said. Was it today that the private sector is doing just fine? Did you see these filthy goddamn Republicans just leap out of the woodwork like a bunch of cockroaches? You've seen those new commercials on television, those horrible, is it Terminex? Exterminators that have those. They're very good commercials. These monsters that come slithering up out of your drain, your bathroom drain. This huge sucking, nothing like anything that's really living. And then it dissolves into just a herd of roaches. Well, that's exactly, I mean, everybody jumped on what he said. They just couldn't wait. These sons of bitches just couldn't wait. Now, look, say what you want about Obama, and I certainly do. But there have been a few ideas that Obama and the Democrats have tried to get through Congress. And you know what the Republicans have done. They made a decision that Obama's going to be a one-term president. They have done nothing. These filthy pig bastards have done nothing for the entire length of Obama's presidency. You know, if I weren't so disgusted by some of Obama's policies, and I mean truly disgusted, I would vote for him just out of spite because of these filthy, filthy. You know, I watched this contemptible little prick. What's his name? Eric. You know, the Speaker of the House, Eric Cantor. Thanks, CB. Eric Cantor floating around like something that didn't flush the first time you pull the handle. And then you see John Boehner standing there with that dry, drunk look on his face. Jesus Christ. And then the turtle from Kentucky, this filthy, nasty Mitch McConnell, you know, making his comments. And, you know, I find this is one of the reasons I have to stop. The only time I tune in to a news channel now, a national news channel, is when I'm in the car and I tune in Sirius and I listen to MSNBC. That's all I can handle anymore. I used to have the monitor on here in the studio, and watch some of MSNBC's nightly stuff. I can't even do that anymore. I can't take it. I will watch local news from the Atlanta metro area, and occasionally I will watch Diane Sawyer and, of course, what's his name on NBC. Well, what's his name? Who will ever forget him? But where was I? Watching these people today, these Republicans, who made a determination that they would destroy this country, they would burn this country to the ground before they would cooperate with Obama. This is unlike anything that in my experience as an observer of the political system. And it can only be attributed to the filthy racism that just devours these bastards. That's the only explanation that has any, you'll pardon the word, rationality to it. These poor white, weak-kneed sons of bitches just can't stand the idea that a man who looks to be what they would consider African-American, he's American-African. What the hell difference does it make? I mean, this guy is a true African-American or a European-African or however the hell you want to put it. But why not focus on his other half? No, of course not. So to have made a determination that no matter what Obama tries to do, even the kind of giveaway to the health insurance industry that Obama came up with this this Affordable Care Act, even that, it doesn't make any difference. Obama could stand up and say, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give every Republican business person in America $1 million. These filthy Republicans would leap up out of their seats in the Congress and find fault with that. And say, you know, I mean, they're scum. They're just scum. I just wish every Republican... Hold on a minute. Hey, Satan! Hey, how you doing? Yeah, how's Andy? Oh, you're kidding. Really? He's doing that? Listen, have you got a conveyor belt? You do? Could you crank it up, open the trap door, and if I kick some of these sons of bitches on the conveyor belt, will you take them down there and roast them? You will? All right, I got to do a commercial here. Well, I'll talk to you during the commercial. Friedman will be sitting in for me next week, Monday through Friday. So play nice, okay? Brad works under very adverse conditions. He'll be here Monday night, same time, same station. I just got to share Robert Reich's blog with you from the other day. It's titled The Quiet Coup d'Etat. And Reich writes, J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, BP, Chevron, Walmart, and billionaires Charles and David Koch are launching a multi-million dollar TV ad buy starting this past Tuesday, blasting President Obama over the national debt. And as Reich writes, actually, I don't know who's behind the ad because there's no way to know. And that's a big problem. The front group for the ad is Crossroads GPS, the sister organization of the Super PAC American Crossroads, run by Republican political operative Karl Rove. Because Crossroads GPS is a tax-exempt nonprofit group, it can spend unlimited money on politics, and it doesn't have to reveal where it gets the dough. By law, all it has to do is spend most of the money on policy issues, which is a fig leaf for partisan politics. Anyway, here's what counts as an issue ad as opposed to a partisan one. The narrator in the ad, Crossroads GPS, is launching solemnly in tones. He says, in 2008, Barack Obama said, we can't mortgage our children's future on a mountain of debt. Now he's adding $4 billion in debt every day, borrowing from China for his spending, every second growing our debt faster than our economy. Tell Obama, stop the spending. This is a lie, by the way. Obama isn't adding to the debt every day. The debt is growing because of obligations entered into long ago, many under George W. Bush, including two giant tax cuts that went mostly to the very wealthy that were supposed to be temporary and which are still going, courtesy of Republican blackmail over raising the debt limit. In reality, government spending as a portion of GDP keeps dropping. As I said, I don't know who's financing this lie, but there's good reason to think it's some combination of Wall Street, big corporations, and the billionaire Koch brothers. According to the Inside Washington Politico, the Koch brothers network alone is planning to spend $400 million over the next 6 months to defeat Obama, which is more than John McCain spent on his entire 2008 campaign. Big corporations and Wall Street are also secretly funneling big bucks into front groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that will use the money to air anti-Obama ads but keep their identities secret. Looking at all the anti-Obama super PACs and political fronts like Crossroads GPS, Politico estimates the anti-Obama forces, including the Romney campaign, will outspend Obama and pro-Obama groups by 2-1 over the next 6 months. How can it be that big corporations and billionaires will be spending unlimited amounts shoving out lies like this one without any accountability because no one will know where the money's coming from? Well, blame a majority of the Supreme Court in its grotesque 2010 Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission decision, as well as the IRS for lax enforcement that lets political front groups like Crossroads GPS or the U.S. Chamber of Commerce pretend they're not political. But you might also blame something deeper, more sinister. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. You can't have served in Washington and seriously believe more than two people can hold on to a big story without leaking it. But I fear that at least since 2010, we have been witnessing a quiet, slow-motion coup d'etat financed by a handful of billionaires, along with some big companies and Wall Street banks, all intent on repealing every bit of progressive legislation since the New Deal by telling Americans a few big lies over and over and over. I desperately hope I'm wrong, but there's growing evidence that I may be right. Robert Reich writing at his blog, I don't know what evidence would think or would indicate that he's wrong. Of course this is happening. Of course it's happening. And it really is a shame that the only champion, I guess is the way to put it, that's available is Barack Obama. It's a shame, isn't it? So I think we're all aware, at least we should be. No, not you, you right-wing trolls that listen to this program. To hell with you. I'm talking about the normal people that listen to this program. We should be prepared for what's about to come. And it's going to be awful. And because so much money is arrayed against this Republican light, Barack Obama, there is a very good chance, given the way our system works, that the next president of the United States is going to be this lying twit, Mitt Romney. Think about that this weekend while you're barbecuing your hot dogs, huh? I'll see you a week from Monday. Oh, don't leave me. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney. Matter of fact, I have two of them wherever you are. Just like my mama said. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Good night, Kathy.
Say it one more time.
Good night, Kathy. Stay tuned.